From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Super Bowl Media Day. Yes, it is one of my favorite events leading up to the Super Bowl. If you caught, you know, some of the interviews yesterday with, of course, Richard Sherman and Peyton Manning. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Both teams sitting down and addressing 5,000, over 5,000 media members. That's wow. That's a ton of media members, folks. But you know what? The talk of the town that everyone's talking about right now is concerning Beast Mode Marshawn Lynch. Now, if you didn't check out his media presser yesterday, I don't even know if you can call it a media presser, but he ducked out of his mandatory interview session with reporters after just 6 minutes and 21 seconds, folks. At first, Marshawn, he didn't want to do the interview session at all. And, you know, once he, you know, of course, you know, if you do not talk to the media, you get fined. So once word spread around that and NFL personnel talked to him, he came out. He did a elongated 6 minutes and 21 second interview session with the media. Then he ducked out again. And they told him to come back out because Deion Sanders wanted to interview him. And Deion did a quick interview session with him. And then he left. So, you know what? It begs the conversation because, you know, this is a debate that I've seen in the paper today and on TV. And many individuals asking whether or not professional athletes should be obligated to talk to the media. And you know what? That's our Barbershop Wednesday topic for today. Again, should professional athletes be obligated, should it be mandatory, for them to talk with the media? We're going to be diving into that. Alex and Matt and I are going to talk about it and give you our thoughts on it. And you can call in and share your opinion of it by picking up that phone. That's right, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And we'll definitely be talking about Media Day in general. I tell you, because Media Day is one of those things where, you know, when individuals, you know, when the athletes go and address the media, they are asked some pretty weird questions, if you will. I think, you know, one of the questions that really stood out to me was, where's Waldo? I have no idea, but many athletes were asked, where's Waldo? I don't know what kind of answers they gave. I'm just looking at the question list here online. From Julius Thomas, Broncos tight end, he was asked, who on the team had the hottest wife? I mean, it's no holds bar at Media Day, so we'll definitely talk about it. It's always a fun time, though. So, but on today's Current Sports, we have a jam-packed show for you. In just a minute, I will be talking with a man who has a pretty big dual meet coming up. Yes, the MSU track and field team. I will be talking with the director of MSU's cross-country and track and field team, Walt Drenth, the team prepares for that dual meet, a pretty big meet coming up. He will be joining me in just a second, and we'll also talk about MSU in Iowa. Michigan State just keeps proving me wrong. Good call, Alex, on that one, I guess. and also, Javid Best is suing the NFL. We'll kind of dive into that as well. So without further ado, though, let's kick this show off on this January 29th, 2014. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, again, MSU, they keep proving me wrong, and they were great last night. Keith Appling, he scored 16 points, and the Spartans outlasted number 15, Iowa, 71-69 in overtime last night, handing the Hawkeyes their first home loss. Matt Costello had 11 points, 12 rebounds for the Spartans, who avoided consecutive defeats despite the absence of injured starters. Of course, Adrian Payne and Brandon Dawson. Devin Marble, he was great last night for Iowa. 21 points for him. MSU now gets ready for Georgetown this Saturday. And again, we're opening up our phone lines if you want to call in and discuss that game and give your thoughts on MSU as they keep cranking out the W's. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We'll be diving into that game in just a sec. New revelations have come out concerning the former Michigan kicker Brendan Gibbons, and the reason he didn't play in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl last month. Now, it said that he was permanently separated from the university in December. Gibbons, a fifth-year player who had been taking graduate school classes, was removed for, quote, violating the university's student sexual misconduct policy. Now, it's based on a letter through the campus newspaper and was sent to Gibbons' Florida home on December 19th by University of Michigan's Office of Student Conflict Resolution. Now, the report cites the incident in question having occurred on November 22nd, this is quite a long time ago, of 2009, when he was being redshirted as a freshman. Now, according to the document seen, there are no known criminal charges against Gibbons. University process operates independent of the criminal justice system, however. So now, Gibbons did not make the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl trip with his teammates, and Brady Hoke, head coach Brady Hoke, told reporters that Gibbons was dealing with a family matter in Florida as the reason he did not make that trip. So we come to find out that was certainly not the case. Interesting stuff there. All right, former Detroit Lions running back Javid Best is suing the NFL, quote, aware of the evidence and risk associated with repetitive traumatic brain injuries, but deliberately ignoring and actively concealing the information. Now, equipment manufacturer Riddle is also named in the suit. Best's attorney stated the suit is intended to set up a medical fund for Mr. Best in order to deal with future medical conditions out of his concussion syndrome. Now, Best, who hasn't played in over 2 years, was recently hired as a student assistant for Cal Berkeley coaching staff as he works to finish his degree. Pistons and Magic, folks. Pistons get a W. Yes, the Detroit Pistons entered their four-game losing streak with a 103-87 win over the Orlando Magic. Andre Drummond had 13 points, 17 rebounds for the Pistons, helping them to a 44-22 advantage in the paint. Now, the big three of Drummond, Josh Smith, and Greg Monroe finally clicked, going a combined 13 of 30 from the field for 37 points and 30 rebounds.
Well, something we've been trying to talk about for a while is trying to concentrate on the defensive end, making more of a focus than the offensive end. So I thought our offense fueled our defense a little bit, which you really like your defense to fuel your offense. But I thought we got our offense going. We got some easy baskets. But the main focus today was just trying to play better defense.
Now, while their next game was scheduled against the Hawks tonight, inclement weather in Atlanta has postponed that matchup. Detroit will likely get back on the hardwood Saturday night versus the 76ers, and you just heard from head coach Mo Cheeks addressing the play of his team last night. All right, Manning praises Caldwell. Now, while Peyton Manning normally gets credit for the new Lions coach Jim Caldwell's success, Manning took time at Super Bowl Media Day to sing Caldwell's praises, saying, quote, "Jim Caldwell has meant a great deal to me in my career. I felt like once he got to Indianapolis and became my quarterback's coach that my game really improved. It took a new step, and I thought Jim had a great deal to do with that. He and I had a set routine, and we tried to perform every day in the meeting room, on the practice field, in different drills. And from 03 to 08, when he was the quarterback's coach, I was playing at a high level." Now, Lions fans can hope Caldwell will have a similar effect on franchise QB Matthew Stafford.
And now Jake has the puck again. He'll go cross ice to Hartnell in again. Hartnell to Giroux. Giroux holds, fires, scores! Gustafson got a piece of it, but not enough. As it dribbled across the line.
Oh, man, the Red Wings. Yes, the Red Wings arrived in Philly looking for their first win since 1997, but they were blanked. The Philadelphia Flyers just completely 5-0. 5-0, folks. Detroit has now lost back-to-back games against the Flyers with a combined score of, get this, 11-3. Ah, man. All right. Tiger Woods has not yet made it official, but he will skip next month's WGC Accenture Match Play, which is the first of four World Championship events. Now, it will be the third time since the event began in 2010 that Woods would not compete. Now, in Tigers, his last four tourney appearances, he has yet to advance past the second round. Of course, this past weekend, he did not advance past the second round for his well, he didn't make the cut in the second round for the first time in his entire career. So there you have that. And also some news, Floyd Mayweather Jr., folks. Floyd Mayweather has been named Fighter of the Year by the Boxing Writers Association of America. Mayweather went on to say, quote, "I have dedicated my entire career to being the best, and because of that, I have been on top for 17 years. Hard work and dedication got me there, and awards like this help keep me there. I thank you so very much." So congrats to Floyd. Well deserving of that. And also want to note some prep action. Of course, the cold weather canceled many games slated for yesterday. But, yes, there were still some who hit the hardwood. And girls basketball, want to shout out Eden Rapids as they top Lansing Christian 47-22, the final of that one. Waverly tops Lansing Catholic 60-45. Montebello tops Fulton 55-49. And as far as the boys go, we had a few games as well. Eden Rapids and Lansing Christian. Eden Rapids pulls out the W, 67-55, the final in that one. Ovid Elsie beats Chesaning 44-37. And probably the biggest, most entertaining game in all of Mid-Michigan last night happened to be the Lansing Catholic and Waverly game, in which Lansing Catholic pulled out a nail-biter, 59-56, the final of that one. In overtime, free throws sealed the deal. Oh, that was certainly, I heard talks about that one. That was certainly an incredible game. So, wow. Gotta love high school boys basketball and girls basketball, folks. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527, and share what's on your noggin. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. All right, well, the man just walked in the door. Let's get to our guest for today. Since 1985, he has led 39 teams to NCAA champion appearances and has coached 109 All-Americans, 61 academic All-Americans in both track and field and cross country. He has also been recognized by his conference and regional peers as Coach of the Year. Get this, 21 times. It's my pleasure to welcome the director of MSU's cross country and track and field teams, Walt Drenth. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on today's show. You know what, Walt? The cross-country team, they just concluded this past season after winning their third Big Ten championship title in 4 years, placing third overall at the 2013 NCAA Great Lakes Regional Championship, not to mention the women surging to sixth place at the NCAA cross-country championship. I mean, you got to consider this season a success, right?
It was a pretty good fall. Yeah, not too bad.
What was the key to that?
Great team chemistry. I think a lot of dedication. You have when you have that kind of consistency, you have a lot of people buy into what you're trying to preach, and it makes a difference than they have. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
Yes, without a doubt, Walt. Now, I got to ask you, were you surprised at all at the success of this year, that this year's cross-country team had? Or did you kind of expect it? What were those expectations set?
Well, when the season started, our goal, honestly, was to, in my mind, was to get back to stay in the top three in the conference, get back to the Nationals, have a good experience, and then we were going to return two of our top people. We redshirted last year's Big Ten champion, Sarah Kroll, and first team All Big Ten, Julia Otwell. Mm-hmm. Kind of a promise I made to them when they were freshmen. The idea was that they could graduate together. It was a great group of kids, kind of came in together, you know, with each other. And some were ready and some weren't. And our promise to them right from the beginning was, you get to graduate together. You get to finish your eligibility at the same time. Right. So we really only went to the Big Ten Championships with three people that had ever participated in the event.
Wow, so, no experience really at all.
Right,
wow.
Right. So you don't go in thinking, okay, we got this. You know, you know, especially going into the season. But once it started and you could kind of see us growing and our expectations growing, then it was like, okay, you know, we'll have a chance.
Right, it certainly had a chance, I tell you that. Now, I want to ask you because, you know, Coach, you have to deal with so many athletes when you talk about cross country and track. I want to ask you, first of all, the differences of coaching when you talk about track and field and cross country. Is there a difference when you look at those two sports? How do you approach it?
No, that's a good question. I think our approach is kind of athlete first. You know, it doesn't matter the gender or the event. We're coaching athletes, and so we're really looking at each kid and how are we going to manage them best from an individual standpoint. I think the challenge in track is it's a team sport, and it's an individual sport. So that kind of combination, we're really trying to get them the track and field athletes to buy into the idea that, you know, your performance is important to a lot of people, not just when you get into the ring or on the runway or stand on the track. Mm-hmm. And in cross country, when you go to the line, the gun goes off and there's 7 or 9 or, you know, 12 people running at the same time. And it's a clear team objective. And I think we've done a good job of finding people that are interested in that team concept in track and field as well.
How do you get them to buy into that concept?
Well, one of the first things we do is we run a couple of scored meets early in the year. Mm-hmm. We were down in South Bend last weekend, and we ran Notre Dame, Illinois State, and Southern Illinois in a scored meet, and it really brings everybody together. You know, when the people are done jumping, they're running around watching the throwers, or maybe watching the people on the track, and vice versa. If the people in the track are finished, they're trying to get themselves involved with a teammate on the field. Mm-hmm. And so I think that sort of mentality sort of helps us kind of grow as a group through the course of the year, and having a couple scored meets in a row kind of really brings the team perspective to the group kind of right away.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. Ladies and gents, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm talking with the director of MSU's cross-country and track and field teams, Walt Drenth. Now, Walt, for you, which sport, when you look at cross-country and track, what's the most difficult to coach for you?
There isn't one.
There isn't one?
No. I think that, there isn't one.
Both equal, right?
Right. And, you know, if you were asking me what my favorite sport is, it would probably depend. Right now, it's track and field. In the fall, it'll be cross country. So
there
whatever,
you go. You know. That's a very politically correct answer.
Well, it's
which
true, too.
There you go, which is true, too.
Right.
You know, Walt, you know, the channel I talk about, I mean, because you deal with so many athletes. I mean, I can kind of compare it to the football team where D'Antonio has so many athletes, so many string of players to deal with. You arguably more in many regards. But, I mean, talk about the challenge of, you know, dealing with so many personalities and so many athletes, and how do you approach that?
Well, I think to start with, I have a great staff. I've got people that help with, you know, in each event area, and I trust them immensely. They do a lot of the day-to-day with some of the athletes. I try to watch practice when my event group isn't in the middle of anything difficult. I try to get around to watch all everybody, whether we're jumping or throwing or whatever. And indoor track makes it a little easier because we're kind of confined to, you know, Jenison this time of year for the
right.
most part. So I get to, you know, I kind of get to interact with everybody. And then we have team meetings to try to, you know, really try to keep that interaction pre-meet and post-meet. So, and the, you know, it's an open door. We have recruits and their parents in. I got to close the door because somebody's almost always trying to wander in if the door is open, which is a good thing and a problem sometimes when
right.
you're trying to have a meeting.
Right. I can just imagine. Now, looking at, you know, this track and field team, you guys, as you alluded to, traveled to South Bend for the Notre Dame Invitational. Now, the men's team came in first place out of 4 teams, total of 179 points, while the women finished a close second to Notre Dame. Now, you talk about, in you know, looking at some of the quotes after that Invitational, if you will, you talked about having some great performances from some new people. Who stood out to you in that regard?
Well, I think probably I didn't mention it when Amy called. I think probably one of the obvious ones that I missed was Kurt Snyder, and he's not new. But when you have a scored meet like this, you rely on some people that may have a lot of dimension. And Kurt's a decathlete. Mm-hmm. He jumped close to 24 feet in the long jump. He was second in the high jump. He scored in the hurdles. He pretty much, as I said to the group, he said he kind of played track and field on Saturday. He was, I don't know if he ever took his shoes off, which
right.
is, you know, he's running back and forth, and it's a tough thing to do. He's pole vaulting. He's getting ready for his first heptathlon in a couple of weeks. So he had a lot on his plate. I think the people that stood out, the new people that stood out, I was really pleased with DeMarcus Leak. I was pleased with Lauren Rose on the women's side, a new hurdler transfer. DeMarcus is a freshman. And then some young distance runners. Again, I thought Aubrey Wildebring was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And our top kids were good. I mean, they have to be. AJ,
right.
Antonio James, he stood out. He's got the number 3 mark in the country right now in the weight throw. And
wow, does he?
Yeah. He's really good. He was the NCAA runner-up last year in the weight, and he was 10th, I believe, last year in the discus. And the Big Ten, I think he was actually a runner-up in the Big Ten, mm-hmm. in the weight.
Wow.
I mean, he's really
good.
He's really good. And Tori Franklin, of course, she's She's been a number of time All-American. She's number three or four in the country right now in the triple jump. So I felt kind of across the board a lot of people stood out.
That is very, very encouraging stuff right mm-hmm. there. Now, you guys are preparing for the Michigan dual meet coming up on February 1st. Now, I want to dive into that because dual meets are not common in track and field, right? Am I pretty dead on with that?
You are dead on. It's sort of a... It's something we're trying to resurrect. We've mm-hmm. always felt it was an important part of again developing a team, but it's a cool event, and I love track and field. I mean, I've been doing this since, well, I don't know. It sounds like forever.
When I give you the incredible resume,
right,
when
I started, good Lord, I didn't know I was alive in 1985. But I thought I was in high school then. Anyway.
Right. Because I know dual meets.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is. It's a thing of the past.
Yeah. What are the differences when you talk about dual meets, comparing them to individual meets?
Right.
For those out there that don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I digress a lot, but being a track and field coach and really liking the sport, some of our meets are just too long, and the mm-hmm. the beauty of a dual meet is that, you know, the running events start at 6:30 and 8:30. The last event goes. So it's a nice short 2.5 hour event. We start the field events a little bit earlier, and that gives them a chance to be kind of in the spotlight before the meet really starts on the track. And the cool thing about it is we've kind of been talking about this for a while. A couple of coaches at Michigan and I, and we decided to go to a neutral site. We rented. There's a lot of alum from both universities that really support us in the West,
right.
On the west side of the state. And so we thought going over there and cooperatively renting their facility at Grand Valley would be a nice way to kind of showcase our kids and some people that might not otherwise get to see us compete.
Yeah.
And last year, according to the AD at Grand Valley, he didn't want any more people in the building. It was full.
Wow, so, it was packed.
Yeah,
and that's good because it level playing field, no home court
right.
advantage, if
right.
you will. That's great stuff because, you know, this is the second straight year having having lone dual meet of the year with Michigan. Only the second in either school's history for the women's program. The men's teams, they met for an indoor meet in 1985, I believe. I mean, it's been quite some time. And, again, you know, you talk about Antonio James. He is currently number three in the nation in the weight throw after hitting a mark of 22.74 meters at the Notre Dame invite this past weekend. And Tori Franklin, you talk about her success. I mean, what are you expecting and what do you want to see from your team going into this one?
Could I put that in perspective? Because I know this is not a metric nation.
Exactly.
But it's a 34-pound ball at mm-hmm. the end of a real short, I mean, basically it has a handle on it. And he threw it almost 74 feet. So 35
oh
pounds, almost 74 feet.
I can do that in my dreams.
Right. I don't know. I'd have to stop in the middle probably if I was carrying it. And then Tori, you know, she jumped real close to, I believe she was close to 43 feet for the triple jump. Which would score in the Nationals right now, and we think she'll be a foot or so better. So a metric to
wow.
go back to that feet and inches to give people a perspective, 43 feet's a long ways
yes,
to
it
triple
is.
Jump.
Yes, it is. Now, again, what are you expecting from your team? What do you want to see from them in this meet? And is the preparation different for this one, seeing as though it is a dual meet?
The preparation isn't much different. It's still early in the year, and we still have to keep in mind what our primary objectives are, and that's to be the best at the end of the year in our championship season. But, you know, what we expect from them is what we expect all the time, is to take care of the process and compete. Mm-hmm. If they do that, you know, it's our job to find the right athletes and to coach them. And,
right.
and if they do that, then it'll go pretty well. We don't really talk specifically about you need to beat this person. It's obvious. We get on the track or you get in the ring and you know who you have to beat.
Right, exactly.
And you know, that's kind of the nice thing about track and field. There's not, you know, once you're out there, you're out there. You got your singling on and everybody's watching and it's just you and the other person. So, it's good. But our primary thing is just to engage in the competition and be really competitive. And I feel like we've got a group that's really embraced that idea.
You know what, Walt? Again, remind those out there listening, if they want to attend that meet, again, it's at a neutral site, Grand Valley, right? Remind
Correct.
The folks where it's at again.
Right, yeah. Grand Valley University. The meet starts the throwing events start at 6 o'clock on Saturday evening. The running events start at 6:30. So the track at 6:30, and the whole thing's wrapped up by 8:30. We
gotcha.
Run a 4x4s at 8:25, I believe.
And is there a price of admission? What's the price of admission?
I think it's $5 a head to get in. I think you can buy a floor pass. It's $12. So
gotcha.
it's pretty reasonable, but it's a nice, you know, it's a great way to get together and have
yes.
at it.
Do not want to miss that. That's going to be very, very entertaining. Now, you know what, Walt, before I let you go, now you are credited, you know, with the dramatic turnaround of MSU's track and field team, you know, when you took over in June of 2006, also the cross-country team. I mean, what did you want to do when you got the head job here?
I find good staff. I mean, there's no way with 130 athletes that I could do it by myself. There's just absolutely no way to be able to find the people that I've been able to find to help is I mean, that's the reason why we've turned it around. You know, having a plan and just sort of really going about trying to have a balanced team, that was our primary objective. I think we have to reassess every 3 or 4 years as a group what, you know, where our strengths and weaknesses are, to how to improve. But, you know, really I just wanted to see a group of student athletes that would come in and buy into the idea of you know, being great students and wanted to be competing at the Big Ten and national level. And we've been pretty fortunate.
Yes, very fortunate. You know, with the success you've had these past few years, are you feeling any pressure to stay on top?
I've never given that any thought, actually.
No pressure.
You know, I don't know we're on top anywhere. We're just trying to get. We're just trying to make our way. And every year is a new year, so I think that there's a lot. You know, a lot of that mentality here. You always want to reload, but we've got a pretty good group of upperclassmen and a nice blend. I'm confident we'll keep getting better.
We have to. You have to, right? Walt, are as cool as a cucumber, man. I tell you what, I wish you all the luck at this dual meet this weekend. Again, February 1st, Michigan dual meet. You do not want to miss it. It will be at Grand Valley. There you have it, the director of MSU's cross-country men's and women's track and field teams and cross-country, Walt Drenth. Walt, thanks so much.
All right,
appreciate
thank you kindly.
It,
it's a lot of fun. I want to come back next two springs from now. We host the Big Ten Championships outdoors, so I got to get back before then.
That you will be in that seat, trust me, okay,
good.
Brother?
Good stuff.
Thanks
right.
a lot, Walt.
Thanks for your time.
All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll dive into MSU and Iowa last night and talk about Kevin Durant, who has been on one incredible scoring binge. Where does it rank in history? Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Aaron, what was that first song you played before the break? Man, that was like some soul funky music, man. That was like some 70s stuff. I loved it. That was great. That was good stuff, man. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. We just finished talking with the head director of MSU's cross-country and track and field teams, Walt Drenth. They are preparing for a pretty, pretty big dual meet against rival Michigan that will be taking place on February 1st at Grand Valley. Wish them all the luck in the world. Walt's such a great guy. Has a very impressive track and field team this season, as he does every year. All right, well, I tell you what, the big news, one another, you know, the MSU, they just keep proving me wrong here, and deservingly so. MSU in Iowa, they got it on last night in a matchup for the ages. I tell you, it went to overtime, and MSU pulled it off. A great, great game. And you know what, Alex, Matt, and I are going to dive into it. Alex, good call. You stuck with your pick. I didn't stick with my pick. I chose Iowa. Matt and I chose Iowa in that game. I tell you what, let's dive right into it, though. I got to say this. MSU has showed tremendous mental toughness, especially last night when you talk about coming off a loss to rival Michigan. You're still without your two starters. You're playing an Iowa team. It's a very, very good team. They go very deep in the bench. Wow. They show tremendous grit and tremendous resiliency in that game. You know, and they play. This is something, I don't know if you guys knew this, but five players in that game for MSU were playing on the court in crunch time with four fouls. Four fouls on the brink of just total disaster. They pulled it off, though. Costello, I said he had to be big, and he was huge. Unbelievable on rebounds, playing tremendous defense, Keith Appling sucking it up, you know, with the wrist injury. He had some key shots down the stretch when they really needed him. Remember that big three-pointer he hit when it looked like Iowa had the clamps on him running? And that zone defense definitely bothered MSU a lot last night. But, I mean, Keith Appling, when it looked like, you know, they were going to come up with a bad shot, Keith Appling just drains a three-pointer to keep him in the thing. I mean, and if you look at Iowa, though, if Iowa just hits free throws, they win the game. Point blank, period. They win the game. They missed a ton of free throws. I'll kick it off right there. Got some more stuff to say, but what were you guys impressed with the most in just overall in that game last night?
Yeah, everything you said was pretty spot on, other than Keith Appling playing through pain, not to be punny, but playing through pain. Costello coming up with some really big tippins down the stretch. I mean, him on the board was big.
Man, he was the X factor in
that
game.
But for me, Al, the biggest story of the game was that small forward position in Russell Bird and Kenny Kaminsky. Because Kaminsky was cold. He wasn't hitting anything. And Russell Bird.
Of course, Bird shot, yeah.
It's out of any game this season, he probably hits one of the most important shots.
He hit the biggest shot of his career.
Might argue that it was the biggest shot for MSU this season under their injury circumstances.
Oh yeah, I would go there. I would definitely go there.
Yeah, that's my biggest story. What about you, Matt?
Well, Bird hasn't hit a shot since December 17th.
Woo, man! Wow.
And he
that
decides.
Long?
And he decides to
was
hit
that born?
One.
That's crazy.
A three key shot
three-pointer?
In overtime.
Three pointer.
I don't know. Has he even taken
any?
He didn't
get a tip-in last game.
Okay,
last game
that's
tip-in.
Fine.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they toughed it out. When you have a team that shoots 43 free throws,
yeah.
Normally you don't see that team wind up with a loss.
Right.
But somehow, some way, Iowa couldn't hit the broadside of a barn last 14:50 until Roy Devin Marble hit that layup.
Yeah.
It was a weird game. There wasn't a lot of flow, whether that was the foul calls or what have you. I don't know. It just seemed like an odd game, and it was just the way that MSU was able to stick around, because there were multiple instances, especially in the second half,
yeah,
where it looked like Iowa was going to pull away.
Yeah.
And they would get a key rebound, a key putback. Something would happen.
The momentum was there. The fans were there.
And they would stick in it. Yeah, it was the biggest game in Carver Hawkeye since 2006, the first time that they had been ranked and hosting a ranked team.
Right.
And to see them bring that effort and to see Michigan State match it, it was impressive, especially, like you said, after the loss to Michigan. All the injuries, everything. They played through it. Costello was huge, like you said. Personally, I loved seeing Denzel Valentine not shoot threes.
Yes, Denzel Valentine had the best, arguably the best game of his career as well.
He drove to the basket, and look what happens.
Yes.
You know, the team has success.
Right.
Because, you know, too many times over the last week or so, you've just seen possessions end with Denzel taking a deep three. That's not his shot. He's not a spot-up shooter.
No, not at all. He's not a shooter in any fathom of the
word. He needs to drive to the hole and
create
find
things.
Somebody.
You know, he had that one unbelievable pass where he drives and finds Costello with the Magic Johnson, Al Martin behind your back, no looker. It was beautiful, beautiful, you know? And he had 12 points, six. What really stood out to me was the rebounding. You had Costello hitting the boards. I mean, you had Valentine. Valentine has six rebounds to go along with 12 points. That's the kind of thing. That stuff right there wins games, like you saw last night. And Gary Harris. Now, granted, I thought that Iowa's defense was very, very well throughout most of that game. They held Gary Harris to, I believe, 9 points. And even though Gary Harris was held to 9 points, not really big offensively, Gary Harris is a tremendous defender. Unbelievable defender. We saw that block in the paint that he had. He would get steals here and there. He's so pesky on defense, and we saw that last night. And, you know, I think Tirico mentioned it, you know, when they were talking, and Izzo has talked about it, you know, left and right, that, you know, many people feel as though Gary Harris is the best in the Big Ten, best player in the Big Ten, but not only on one end of the court offensively, but both ends of the court, because he can play defense, he can score when you need him to. He also did the little things that contributed to that win last night. And, man, and MSU holding Iowa. And don't get me wrong, Iowa had some very – Iowa just couldn't hit. I mean, they couldn't hit from the free throw line. Then they go 15 minutes without a field goal? Oh, my – that blew my mind. They were only getting their points off the – the hand-checking rule being in effect and going to the line and hitting free throws. We saw that. We saw the hand-checking rule really live and in full effect last night.
It was crazy because it seemed like if it wasn't a foul 20 feet from the basket, they were not going to blow the whistle. You could tackle a guy on a shot attempt and nothing would get called. But if you, you know, even...
Yeah.
Even touched a guy.
So are you guys rethinking this whole hand-checking rule? Because you guys
I'm not rethinking the rule. I'm rethinking how it's being implemented. Yes. Because they did a terrible job of actually enforcing it.
But you know with the hand-checking rule, if you even if I even just tip Alex with my hand just now, that's a foul. You're being called. It's foul. You're going to the line shooting two free throws. That's what I was worried
that's
about.
That's a little extreme, Al.
It is. That's how it's being called right now. We saw it last night. We saw it. I mean, we saw it multiple times. Gary Harris would just breeze somebody with his hand, foul, two shots. And MSU got into the bonus very, very early in that second half. But we saw it called multiple times last night. I'm sitting there like, are you serious, dude? Like, really? I couldn't believe it, man.
And poor Gavin Schilling. I know he's not getting a lot of touch fouls on the perimeter, but that guy... Mm-hmm. It's gonna happen. He's gonna turn the corner, but right now he's just a walking foul, and it's that freshman syndrome. Is when you're a freshman big man, it's super tough to get used to the college game and get used to, you know, how it's going to be called.
Right.
And it just hasn't clicked for him yet.
Right.
I'm still excited about him. I still think he's gonna be a good player, but it's tough to watch. You feel bad for him.
Yeah, you do. I think Gavin is. He's very athletic. You know, what I've seen, you know, spurts from him offensively, I mean, he seems like he's got some moves in his bag. He's just got to fine-tune some things and learn how to play within the college game. I do agree. He will be good as time goes on. Hey, you may even see him blossom late this season. You never know. But overall, I mean, the toughness that MSU showed last night was very, very encouraging for all Spartan fans out there. That's the staple of a Tom Izzo team. You know what I mean? They just brushed it off. Keith Appling, again, he's sucking up this injury with his wrist. And I believe, you know, before the game, Allison, the new sideline reporter for ESPN, she went to go shake Appling's hand and do the interview before the game. And Appling was like, be gentle with me. You know, my wrist hurts. You know how Keith talks. But, yeah, I mean, and it's really bothering him. He had a sling after the game on his wrist after the game had ended. I mean, it's really bothering him, but he sucked it up, toughed it up, and went out there and played. Travis Trice, you know, with what he's going through, he had a few big shots down the stretch. I mean, MSU surprisingly found a way to stay in that game. Iowa helped with all the free throws they missed. And MSU stuck around, and eventually they closed it out. Now, again, Keith Appling goes to the line and misses two free throws down the stretch and still keeps Iowa, you know, a last breath, if you will. And, of course, the layup was missed. But it's really, really – when you look at that game, that game was so, so important for many regards. I think it was the most important game, most important win for this team this season, without a doubt.
Yeah, I agree, especially from a confidence perspective.
Yeah.
Because you can go on the road without Payne and Dawson and get the job done against a quality opponent.
Right.
And, you know, this might be a turning point for the younger players and the guys who didn't get as much playing time earlier in the season. Maybe they start to put things together on a consistent basis now. And, man, if they get healthy, March is going to be a pretty fun time of year.
Yes, it is. I can't wait for it. We have a caller on line one, John from Holt. John, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, doing great, man. Hey, what an impressive win after such an emotional loss against Michigan, man. I mean, that team showed a lot of heart, a lot of character last night.
Yes.
Coming back from a loss like that, man. I mean, that took a lot out of all those guys after that loss. Appling was way down. I mean, those guys really responded. I'm very impressed with the team.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, John. Yeah, I mean, it was like I said, it was so impressive because they showed a lot of resiliency in that game, which was something that was very encouraging. And, you know, we talked about that inside presence being gone with – you know, with an AP and with BJ being out, going against an Aaron White, Basabi. I mean, Costello battled with those guys last night. I mean, he went at it. I mean, and he held his own. I mean, 12 rebounds. That was huge. I mean, Costello with the tip-ins. I mean, Matt Costello, for me, he really stood out. He was the X factor for me in that game because without him getting those rebounds, giving MSU those needed second chance opportunities, we saw in one possession where Iowa were running the 2-3 zone. They were switching up between 3-2 and 2-3, where Costello got two rebounds in a row, providing three opportunities for MSU to get a look at the goal and try to score, and they did on that possession. And I'm just sitting there looking like, wow, they're just battling right now with this team and really out-hustling them. And that's what you saw in that game. Devin Marble is going to be a special player, though. Devin Marble, I think, I mean, he had 21 points for Iowa in yesterday's game. He's a guy that really, that was my first time actually sitting down and getting a chance to watch him play. He's got a really, really good game. I love him in transition. He can shoot the ball. He can put it on the ground. He was impressive. He was definitely impressive and gave Gary Harris, you know, Gary Harris was running around every which way trying to catch up with Marble. I thought overall, though, Gary Harris defensively, when they needed stops, he did a great job with his defense. So what a win, though. What a win. And Russell Bird, the Birdman, getting that shot, 30 seconds left in OT. You know, Graham Couch has a, I don't know if you guys read his Twitter account, but he has a this funny little saying or kind of nickname for Russell Bird. He calls him the legend. And you should have seen him after Bird hit that shot. The legend was trending, I guess, in mid-Michigan, if you will. Rex Rowe started tweeting it. I mean, there were so many tweeting the legend. So
but the most
that might catch on.
The most legendary part of the shot is that he was so off balance when he shot it.
He's always off balance when he shoots it.
Okay, there are many times he doesn't jump straight up, but at this shot, when he jumped in the air, he moved like a foot or two to the left and
he
then
released
it.
He does that every time he shoots the ball.
That's
no,
the Birdman
not,
shot.
Not every time.
Every time, Alex.
Not every time.
Watch the tape. Every single time.
I'm there
time.
At the game. It's not every time.
I don't know. Bird, yeah, Bird is he's not the best at gathering himself and then taking a shot. But
well, I mean, a couple of foot injuries will do that to you.
Yeah, but he can make those shots, though. He used to. He can make them. You know, when he was in high school, he could make them. But we haven't seen that, you know, come to fruition since he's come to MSU. But, I mean, that's what Bird does, man. I mean, and you could just feel. I just felt when he released that shot, I had a feeling it was going in. I just felt something. I don't know. Something went up my spine. I was like, oh, that's
cool. Pure
going
elation
in.
On his face as he ran down the court.
Oh, yeah.
Too. Well deserved, too. Good for him.
Well
no
deserved.
No fear.
Yes.
That's a big shot.
Yes. You know, it well deserved for. You know, and it was a funny story before we hit the second break. I forget what game it was, but I go into the locker room after a game. And no one's talking to Russ. Like Russ is just sitting there, you know, putting on his gear,
on his phone,
and everything. No one's talking to Russ because you know he's not getting a lot of playing time and going through a lot of things. And I'm like, you know, I'm gonna talk to Russell Bird. He looks lonely over there. And I go to Russ, and he's so surprised. He's like, "What? You want to talk to me?" I'm like, "Yeah, why not, man?" He's like, "Wow, this is unbelievable, really." And he was so elated just to have the media talk to him. So I feel good for the kid. It's well deserving for him. So. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Kevin Durant and kind of dive in really quick on whether or not professional athletes should be obligated to talk to the media. That's our Barbershop Wednesday. Again, you can call in and express your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. And you know someone who has been really, I love Wednesdays because we talk a little bit NBA, my favorite sport. Kevin Durant has been on one incredible scoring binge, folks. I believe 11 games, over 30 points or more. Unbelievable. And actually, I mean, all eyes will be on the TV tonight as the Thunder and Heat go at it. Kevin Durant and LeBron James, two of the best scorers in the league, arguably going at it. And I would definitely be watching that one after the recording of Current Sports TV. Again, you can be a part of that live audience by signing up at WKR.org. I'm sitting down with Greg Malik, the head athletic trainer over at Lansing Community College. But, yeah, guys, Kevin Durant has been unbelievable. LeBron went on to say earlier this week, quote, "He can't be guarded 1-on-1." Now, Durant is averaging 38.5 points in his past 11 games, shooting 64% over his past six games, and have led the Thunder now to the best record in the West without Russell Westbrook. I want to ask you guys, I mean, where does this scoring streak that he's on right now, where does Kevin Durant rank in history right now, just looking at what he's done so far? And I got to tell you, I mean, he looks just unstoppable. Now,
right.
He's hitting, looking at the way he plays, too, he's hitting, these are not easy shots he's taking, some of them. You know what I mean? If you look at that game winner over the Hawks, I mean, that was three guys in his face, nothing but the bottom of the net. Let's go home. W for the Thunder. I mean, unbelievable stuff. He can take you on the dribble. He can shoot from the outside. He can post you up. I mean, what he's doing is remarkable, and I got to put him. I would put him right now. I would have to say he's in my top 10 as far as scores all time in the NBA history. I will put him in my top 10.
Top 10? I don't know, Al. I think it's a little bit too early. We talked about it the other day about putting him maybe even in the top 20 players, and I think Matt alluded. Was it you, Matt, who alluded? It was a little too early. There are plenty of players that have gone on scoring stretches. Tracy McGrady had a big one back in the early 2000s. How about Dirk Nowitzki? How about we can keep going? Kobe Bryant and Carmelo Anthony had a pretty big scoring streak. So I think there are many players like him that have had this much of an impact with scoring. But I think there needs to be a little more from him to put him to that higher pedestal, Al. I don't think it's ready to call him one of the top 10 scorers. You said of all time?
Of all time.
I think that's an overstatement.
Matt?
I think calling him right now a top 10 scorer of all time is overstating it, but certainly there's no reason to doubt that he will get there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Kobe Bryant had a streak in 2003 where he had 16 games with 30-plus points. He averaged 40 a game. Now,
Kobe was unbelievable.
You know, that was obviously when he had Shaq and, you know, the Lakers were the Lakers, but what Durant's doing without Russell Westbrook is especially impressive, and you look at the numbers, he's hitting 50% from the right wing from three-point land.
Yep.
That's where he's shooting the ball now. Yep. Because without Westbrook, he kind of initiates the offense, and he can just take guys off the dribble and shoot right over them because he's 6'9 and has, you know, Stretch Armstrong arms.
Right,
you know,
right.
No one's going to get a hand in his face when he's that far from the hoop. And he's so deadly accurate. You kind of have to pick your poison, because if you play up on him, he's going to drive past you, take one dribble, and he's at the hoop because
exactly.
He is so long.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's almost impossible to stop him.
That's what I'm saying. I've never seen a player of his physique be so accurate on anywhere, any part of the court. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's so long. He shoots the three-pointer so accurate. He can put it on the ground. I mean, he has no weakness.
Right.
Offensively.
Yeah,
no weakness.
And lanky players like him. Let's look at the lankiest players in the NBA. I think that the lankiest players are Dirk, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Kevin Durant. LaMarcus Aldridge can't shoot a three ball and doesn't have the speed.
Right.
Dirk Nowitzki doesn't have the speed. Durant has the speed, can shoot the three ball, and it's just as lanky.
He's got everything you want in an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah.
You know,
he's just... Like, LeBron is just judged to be such a freak with his explosiveness and his size and his strength.
They're both freaks.
Durant is a freak in the sense that he has an unblockable shot, and he's a really tall frame, yet he could still shoot a three-pointer better than anybody.
He's a guard.
Yeah, he's
you
a
know?
Guard.
He's
right,
a guard
exactly.
In a forward's body.
And the thing that he does well also, and it, I think it's understated all the time because of what he's doing on the offensive end, but he plays defense as well. I mean, countless times, blocking shots, annoying guys. I mean, because he's so long. I mean, he bothers so many guys that he's guarding. He gets in passing lanes well. He knows the game. He has such a great knack for the game. Now, granted, you guys know me, and I've also put this out there many times. If I could throw a wet rag on this whole thing, if you will, Kevin Durant in today's league caters to scores, without a doubt. And we started to see that change when Michael Jordan used to actually put his hand, when he was guarding a guy, or even when he had the ball, he would put his hand on a guy's hip and kind of just push him out the way and kind of angle that guy where he wanted him not to go and score. The refs start to see that, and now you can't even touch a guy in today's league or be called a foul. I mean, today's league is so catered to scores that, you know, it allows the Kevin Durants and LeBron James of the world to throw up 30 and 40, you know. Fouls are called left and right. So I will say that. But, again, I will say Kevin Durant hits tough shots so many times that, you know, that argument does hold some weight. But not too much, I would say. So
I mean, you can say he gets to the line a lot. And during the streak,
mm-hmm.
I mean, before the streak started, he averaged 7 free throws a game. During the streak, he's averaging 12.
Right.
12 and a half. So he's getting to the line more often. He's more aggressive. He shoots 56% from mid-range. The league average is 39.
It's crazy.
That's ridiculous.
Crazy.
And teams know that he's going to be scoring the ball because, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like Reggie Jackson is going to consistently score 28 points a game. It's not going to happen.
They double team.
And it doesn't matter.
And it does not matter.
It does not matter. He will elevate over you or he will go around you. Whatever he has to do. He's shooting 71% from the right baseline.
That's crazy.
Which is dumb. That is dumb.
That's stupid.
It's like better than video games.
Right.
Like
yeah.
That should not be humanly possible.
Right.
But the guy is doing it on a consistent basis. And to do it without Westbrook, I mean, do you guys think this is the ascension? Do you
think
he's taking a leap right now?
I think so. You know, I go back to April of last year when, you know, he sat down and said, I'm tired of being second. You know what I mean? I always go back to that moment. I said, okay. And, you know, he caught a lot of flack for that, you know, from a lot of media members saying, oh, why would you say that? I mean, you keep that in-house to yourself. I'm like, no, he's coming out and saying, he's being honest with you guys and saying he's tired of being second, and he works his butt off so hard in the offseason, him and LBJ workout. And that moment for me just shows you the competitive mind. He's so competitive, and he wants to be the best in the game. He wants to be the best in the game. He plays with that chip on his shoulder, and he knows that LeBron, all this talk of LeBron James, the best in the world, blah, 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 that fuels Kevin Durant, and we're starting to see him say, hey, I'm pretty good too. I'm pretty darn good too, and that's why I can't wait to watch tonight's game, because you talk about LeBron James, who is considered the best in the world, going against Kevin Durant, who wants to be the best in the world. Those two clashing, I can't wait to watch it. I cannot wait to watch. And LeBron James is the guy. If you look at LeBron James' scoring, I mean, his scoring hasn't been this low since his rookie season. I couldn't believe that when I looked that up. But granted, so. I mean, it's, like you said, when you look at it, you know, the makeup of the Miami Heat now, and it's so many factors to weigh into that. Kevin Durant, though, is unbelievable. It's not a matter of if he'll get a ring. I think it's a matter of when. With Kevin Durant, he will get a ring before it's all said and done. And you know, it's a pleasure to watch him play. He's unbelievable.
All right, two questions.
Yeah,
what do you think of the nickname, the Slim Reaper? Because I actually kind of like that one. It's way better.
Who came up with that?
Oh,
one?
That one's it's popular. It's kind of gained steam during the streak.
The Slim Reaper.
Much better than, you know, Durantula or even KD. I think it's,
I don't like Durantula. It's,
I don't like
it's too cliche.
No, I think the Slim Reaper.
When I hear KD,
is great.
I think of KG a little bit. I just think it's too close. Too close.
Second question, you're building a team. Mm-hmm. Is he your first pick?
Wow, if I'm building a team?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. Man, it will be him or LeBron. If my first pick?
Yeah, you have the first overall pick in the, you know, NBA.
For the
blows
players
everything
right
up,
now. For every,
fantasy
for everybody,
draft. For everybody at their age right now.
I would go with LeBron.
You go with LeBron
I
still?
Would still go with LeBron. I got to see. I love KD.
He'd be yours. He'd be mine.
Kevin Durant?
Yeah. He would be mine.
It's a tight race, and you can't forget Paul George either.
Paul George
is making the leap, too, and he plays better defense than maybe anybody.
First pick, though, I will go LeBron.
LeBron?
I mean, he's so imposing.
It's tough to argue.
It's tough. That's a tough one. I mean, I could see Kevin Durant, too, because he's an offensive machine, you know what I mean? But, wow, I can't wait to watch tonight's game. All right, real quick, guys. We got 7 minutes left. Real quick, Barbershop Wednesday. I want to pose this question because I don't know if you guys saw Marshawn Lynch yesterday. Of course, yesterday was Super Bowl Media Day. It's a big day in sports, especially when you talk about the Super Bowl. 5,000 media members just huddled around all of the NFL players that would be playing in Sunday's game. And Marshawn Lynch really wanted no part of it. He was not there for the opening part of the Media Day. He went ghost, and then NFL personnel tried to go, you know, look for him and remind him that if you don't show up, you will be fined. All right, once he said that, he came out for 6 minutes and 21 seconds and addressed the media. And he says, all right, peace out. I'm going back in my little cubbyhole, wherever he was going. And they say, no, you got to, you know, Deion Sanders wants to talk to you. So he comes out and talks to Deion. And he says, all right, I'm going back in my cubbyhole. And he's gone for the rest of the day. So I want to pose to you guys and ask this question. Should pro athletes be obligated to talk to the media?
Yeah, I think
I'll let you guys start off and give my opinion.
I think absolutely they should. I think, we talked about this earlier, but there's two sides of this. There's talking to someone in the locker room after a game and just kind of a impromptu interview, and then there's the side of a set, scheduled press conference after a majority request from media. If there is a majority request, and that is the public asking to interview a player, then I believe that the player is obligated to go. If it's an impromptu locker room thing, like we talked about, it's not as big of a deal because that's just a single person wanting to talk to someone. But the role of the media is to engage the public and and answer the questions that the public would like to know.
And that's where I come from. When you talk about it, yes, they should be obligated to talk to the media, because journalists, at the end of the day, like, you know, they have jobs to do. They have obligations to put out there and put out an article that is not just, you know, stating the obvious, but they have to give quotes and insight from the players who went out there and performed. That is a part of what journalists do, and it's a part of their job. Anytime you have an athlete saying, "I don't want to talk to the media," I mean, that's hindering the job [S2] Right. [S1] Of journalists. And not to mention, when you talk about endorsements, I want to briefly talk about endorsements real quick. Sports are business. Endorsements are a part of sports. I believe Marshawn Lynch is a guy who just got an endorsement with Skittles.
Mm-hmm.
As the face of Skittles right now, one of the faces of Skittles, the product, the brand wants you out there. They want to see your personality. They want to see you promoting the brand and showing your personality to a regard. That also, that's at the end of the day, that puts money in your pocket.
Yeah. I one more thing to add before Matt goes.
Go ahead.
With the dollars in your pocket, I think Matt's probably going to comment just on that. But the point of a journalist is to maximize the truth. That's the brand of it. Minimize the harm.
And if you can't talk to an athlete, how is that doing it?
If you can't talk, if you're not talking to the media, then you're maximizing your own harm by doing so to the public. Man. So,
okay, as far as the Skittles endorsement goes,
yeah,
Skittles isn't looking for Marshawn Lynch to engage the media. Skittles is looking for Marshawn Lynch to score touchdowns and get rained on with Skittles.
No,
that is what they want. That is the reason he got the deal
guys
in the
with
first
Nike,
place.
Got, like LeBron James with Nike,
they're in
and
a Nike commercial. It's not like they're saying I love Nike.
You have to show your personality out there. That's why endorsements they get you for what you do on the field, but also your personality off of it. That's a check.
What has Marshawn Lynch shown off the field that got him that endorsement?
Marshawn Lynch
deal?
Marshawn Lynch not talking to the media is doing nothing to benefit endorsers who are looking for him to embrace their product.
But he already got a deal.
That's business.
Because of his play on the field.
That's business. So Marshawn Lynch denying to talk to the media. That's what a brand wants.
I never
He's
wondering what he did off the field.
What did you do off the field to get that deal in the first place?
I'm not talking about I'm talking about on the field. On the field, that's what got him the endorsement because he's a big name. Skittles says, okay, that's a big name. Let's put him on our product. But if you're going to endorse our product, you have to show your personality to the public so that the overall product looks good.
Perfect.
That's business 101.
Let's go back to the Bears in the Super Bowl in 2006. Brian Urlacher wears a vitamin water hat. His new endorsement gets fined $100,000 by the NFL for wearing a non-league sponsored hat. Media day.
In that regard, this is what I mean.
Engaging the media?
Google Glasses at the draft.
Not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is your personality. Not if you wear a vitamin water hat during a presser or wearing the product during the game. I'm talking about. If you are a member of the endorser, if I'm with Nike, me and my personality reflects that brand. Me saying no, I'm
so
not talking.
Tiger Woods
me
sex
saying,
scandal
me,
was
no, no,
good
no,
for
listen,
Nike because he talks
saying,
to the media.
Me saying I'm not talking to the media at all. I don't want to talk to them. That makes the brand look bad. You're representing the brand.
At the same time. In the lead up, you said there were questions like, where's Waldo? Who has the hottest wife on the team?
Yeah, but you're obligated to be there, Matt, and he's denied the obligation.
He was there for 6 minutes. He did his time. He went to the event. Just because he doesn't want to answer dumb questions from people who have nothing to do with
football.
It's
a part of the essence of the Super Bowl.
We'll have to continue this.
We will leave the show with this tomorrow. All right. Thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing and WKR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a beautiful day. And be easy, people.